Our final content segment today covers a mix of community stories, creative projects, and ideas that resist easy categorization, which, honestly, is some of the best of what Hacker News surfaces. And we're going to end this segment with a genuine steel man exercise around one of the strongest technical claims from today's episode.
Let's start with the post that I found most personally affecting from today's list. A user named Nicholas JBS posted a thank you to Hacker News, reflecting on 15 years of being part of the community and describing how it helped them find what they call their life's work. It scored 633 points and has 70 comments, which for a personal reflection piece is remarkable. It's not a product announcement or a technical breakthrough. It's someone expressing genuine gratitude for a community that changed the trajectory of their life.
The reason this lands is that it's specific. It's not a generic, "this community is great" post. It describes particular conversations, particular ideas encountered in comment threads, particular moments where a piece of advice or a shared link led somewhere unexpected and important. Reading through the comments, you find dozens of people describing similar experiences, how a HN thread introduced them to a concept, a company, or a person that became central to their career or thinking. It's a reminder that the social value of communities like HN is genuinely hard to quantify, but also genuinely real.
The Regressive JPEGs project is delightful in a completely different register. The project at MauriceS.com takes the JPEG compression algorithm and inverts its optimization target. Instead of compressing toward a high-quality output, it deliberately seeks the most aesthetically interesting, wrong representations. The results are images that have been transformed through iterated JPEG compression in ways that create unexpected visual artifacts, color banding, blocking artifacts, and strange emergent patterns that function almost as generative art.
What the HN community has latched onto is the underlying observation that JPEG's lossy compression artifacts, which we normally treat as degradation to be minimized, can be treated as a creative medium when you approach them intentionally. It's a perspective inversion. The error becomes the material. Scored 403 points, which tells you how broadly this resonated.
The IKEA Complexity Index is another project that's funny, but also analytically interesting. The creator scraped IKEA product data and built an index that ranks IKEA furniture by assembly complexity, using step count, part count, tool requirements, and component diversity as proxies. The Kallax bookshelf sits somewhere in the middle. The more elaborate Besta combinations rank much higher. The comment thread has people sharing their war stories about particularly complex IKEA builds. But there's also genuine discussion about what complexity means in assembly instruction design and how IKEA's instruction clarity has evolved over their history.
Which connects to the LEGO building instructions history piece from the official LEGO website, which traces how their printed instruction booklets have evolved from relatively sparse diagrams in the 1960s to the highly refined visual step-by-step guides they produce today. It's a surprisingly thoughtful piece about technical communication design, how you convey spatial assembly information without words across language barriers.
The three ways people respond to a problem other than solving it post has generated substantial discussion at 142 comments. The framework the author presents is: people either deny the problem exists, they define the problem as someone else's responsibility, or they reframe what counts as success so the problem is no longer a failure. What makes the thread interesting isn't the framework itself, which is fairly intuitive, but the examples people bring from their own organizational experience. Engineering teams, startup founders, and policy people all seem to recognize the patterns immediately.
There's also the Dirt Notebook post. Someone describing the practice of keeping a physical notebook specifically for rough, unfinished thinking. Not a journal, not a project log, a space explicitly designated for messy, in-progress ideas that aren't ready to be shared or polished. The HN response has been warm and reflective, with people sharing their own analog note-taking practices and what role physical writing plays alongside digital tools.
The Vaghdanu Sanskrit chanting TTS system deserves specific mention because it's technically ambitious in an underserved domain. Building a text-to-speech system for Sanskrit, a language with complex Sandhi rules, specific prosodic requirements for Vedic chanting, and limited digital training data, is genuinely hard. The project has produced something that scores 185 points, suggesting real interest from the HN community in both the linguistic challenge and the cultural preservation angle. Getting prosody right for chanting is a different problem than conversational TTS. You need to capture rhythm, pitch patterns, and the specific articulation of Vedic recitation.
The Waldy writing platform and the Instacart order co-occurrence analysis round out the community section. Waldy is a minimalist writing and reading tool. The pitch is that it's a quiet, distraction-free space for both writing and discovering what others have written, somewhat in the vein of Bear or IA Writer, but with a discovery layer. The Instacart analysis is exactly what you want from a fun data project. Someone ran association rule mining on 3.2 million grocery orders and found genuinely unexpected item pairs that co-occur at rates that can't be explained by random chance. The results apparently include some combinations that are simultaneously very funny and anthropologically revealing about American grocery habits.
All right, now I want to do the thing we committed to, the what if we're wrong exercise. And I want to apply it to the claim that static search trees are 40 times faster than binary search, because that's the most confidently stated technical claim from today's episode, and it deserves scrutiny.
I'll take the skeptic role. The number 40 is striking. Benchmark numbers that striking are often either true in very specific conditions or artifacts of how the benchmark was constructed. What are the conditions under which static search trees produce that kind of speed up?
The honest answer is large datasets, random access patterns, and a benchmark that's specifically measuring lookup throughput in isolation. The 40x figure comes from datasets that are large enough to not fit in L3 cache. We're talking tens of millions of elements or more. For those scenarios, the cache miss-dominated cost of binary search is real, and the more cache-friendly memory layout of the static search tree genuinely helps. But here's where I think the claim could be overstated. Most real-world applications that need fast search either have datasets that fit comfortably in cache, or they have access patterns that are non-random, either skewed toward hot elements or sequential enough that hardware prefetchers handle binary search well anyway.
So the implicit assumption behind the 40x claim is that you're operating in a regime where random access latency is the bottleneck. If your workload has temporal locality, if you're repeatedly accessing the same elements, then an LRU cache on top of binary search might outperform the static search tree even on large datasets. And if your dataset fits in RAM, but the access pattern has any structure, the gap narrows considerably.
There's also a maintenance cost consideration. A static search tree, as the name implies, is efficient when the underlying data doesn't change. If you need to insert or delete elements, you have to rebuild the structure. Binary search on a sorted array is trivial to update with standard sorted insertion algorithms. For read-heavy, write-rare workloads, static search trees are compelling. For workloads with frequent updates, the operational overhead is real.
And here's the strongest version of the counterargument. Most of the performance gains described in this paper are already captured in production database systems that use B-trees with cache-optimized node layouts. PostgreSQL's B-tree index implementation already does much of what this paper describes. If you're already using a database, you're already getting a lot of this benefit. The paper's contribution is primarily in formalizing and extending the insight rather than introducing something that production systems haven't been implementing heuristically for decades.
What to watch for if we're wrong? If you adopt a static search tree in production and see consistent 20 to 40x gains across diverse access patterns and dataset sizes, the benchmark results are more general than we've given credit for. If the gains only materialize in micro-benchmark conditions and disappear under realistic mixed workloads, then the appropriate response is to treat this as a useful theoretical contribution that's most relevant to specialized high-performance computing contexts rather than general application development.
That's the rigorous version of it depends, and it's more useful than either 40x faster, change everything, or benchmarks are always misleading.